11. Lowdown Subterranean End Times Blues, Revisited. The haunted human psyche craves resolution. Indeed, it petulantly demands it. This unfortunate state of affairs may be a simple issue of how gray matter has been hardwired by millions of years of mutation and natural selection, a quirk of evolution riding piggyback on the emergence of a complex higher consciousness. We cannot know if the Australopithecines or their forebears were burdened by this same weakness, and it is a weakness, as we cannot observe their interactions with an unresolved and likely unresolvable universe. We can't question them. But humans, inherent problem-solvers that we are, chafe at problems that cannot be solved, questions that cannot ever, once and for all, satisfactorily be put to rest. The assassination of President Kennedy, the Permian-Triassic extinction event, the WOW signal, Caspar Hauser, the Voynich manuscript, the identity of Jack the Ripper, just for example. How many angels can dance on the head of a pin? I got a million of them. The mind balks at the idea that these mysteries will never be solved, which, of course, has no bearing on their solvability. All the king's horses and all the king's men are for naught. Wishing ain't getting. In his heart of hearts, the signalman knows this is gospel. But his job is, all the same, to pursue answers for the powers that be, the power brokers, the gatekeepers. And in the absence of answers, he's learned to settle for the doubtful consolation of necessary fictions. He is, above all else, a practical man. Whatever idealism he once might have harbored was sacrificed a long, long time ago. Scar tissue stiffens and numbs the inquisitorial soul. The death of Chloe Stringfellow closed avenues of investigation that could never again be opened. And the answers in Immaculata Sexton's dreadful briefcase only got him just so far. And so it goes. Still and all, there is a trail of half-truths and three-quarter lies that leads him finally to San Diego and the Hollister Street Days Inn, less than 3 miles from the Mexican border, less than 100 miles from the ranch on the shores of the Salton Sea. He caught a lucky break, got a tip from a CI, a schizophrenic who spent the last 2 decades creating a concordance for the Weekly World News, the world's only reliable news, painstakingly cataloging and correlating everything from Jersey Devil sightings to Bat Boy, from Israeli mermaids to the discovery of an alien spacecraft at the bottom of the Baltic Sea. Even a broken clock is right twice a day, and patterns inevitably emerge. All those strange things that come and go as early warnings. And one of those patterns leads the signalman and 3 FBI agents to room 210. That the tip came from the lunatic fringe and not from complaints about the smell is just exactly the sort of thing that never ceases to amaze the signalman. There in the parking lot was Drew Standish's 1967 red Buick sport wagon, and behind the door to room 210 was his corpse and the corpse of a woman who will later be identified as Madeline Neitlinger, a former Facebook executive who's been missing since January 2013. A coroner back at Groom Lake will determine that they'd both been dead since at least July 5th. Their skulls have been cut open and their brains removed, the brainstem so neatly divided by the spinal column that even the most jaded neurosurgeon would surely be impressed. There was not so much as a drop of blood anywhere. The bodies have been positioned on their backs, hands folded on their chests. Both were naked, their clothing neatly folded and placed thoughtfully in the room's chest of drawers. As for the top halves of their bisected crania, genuine skull caps, those turned up in the bathroom sink. Hungry ants were everywhere. The brains themselves were nowhere to be found. One of the FBI agents excused himself and vomited his breakfast over the railing and onto the asphalt below. Standish's black book, described in a dossier from Immaculata's briefcase, was nowhere to be found. On the other hand, there was a peculiar metal cylinder resting on a table near the door, and some would say that it more than makes up for the missing book. The signalman is, however, most emphatically not one of those people. The cylinder only poses 100 new questions and answers none. It's about a foot tall, not quite a foot in diameter, with 3 sockets arranged in an isosceles triangle on the convex surface of one end. As for the composition of the metal itself, that will never be determined, though it will be found to match other anomalous samples recovered from Roswell, New Mexico, and Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. SEM magnifications from less than 100x to 15,000x, EDX area scans, elemental mapping, and point-and-shoot analysis will all fail to yield conclusive results. Looking at the cylinder, the signalman shuddered as he considered, albeit briefly, chartering a fishing boat and sinking the damned thing in the deep Pacific water out beyond the Coronado escarpment. In the long years to come, the cowardice that stays his hand will be a recurring source of regret. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. Don't you know it? 3 nights after the discovery at the Days Inn, when Standish and Nightlinger's corpses are safely on ice in Nevada, and the metal cylinder is forever vanished into the labyrinthine bowels of dreamland, the signalman, more than half drunk, gives in and calls a number that Immaculata Sexton gave him that night back in Winslow, scribbled on the back of a coffee-stained paper napkin. He'd almost thrown it in the trash. He'd certainly never intended to use it. Not for sweet baby Jesus, love, or green folding money. But in the dead of night, alone with his thoughts and memories and fears, alone with a deeper despair than he's ever known, intentions turn out to mean less than nothing. She answers on the 4th ring. Her voice is every bit as icy as he remembers. "You found him," she says before he has a chance to even say hello. "How the fuck do you know that?" "A little bird," she replies. "Whatever," he says, and laughs. "I'm calling it quits, putting in for early retirement. I think they'll let me go. I think Albany sees they've wrung every last bit out of me they're going to get. The salad days are over and gone." There's a long pause then, and it's the signalman who finally breaks the silence. "It's not finished, is it?" "No," she says, "it isn't. It's only just begun." But she kindly doesn't tell him about the streets she'll walk in a ruined L.A., only 28 years farther along, or the battalions of winged fungoid monstrosities skimming low above shattered skyscrapers, or the black ships. "You know about New Horizons, too?"
"I do."
"Good," he says. "Then I don't have to tell you."
"If it's any consolation, you did the best you could, and you may have bought us all a little more time."
Another pause, and then he says, "That tarot card, the one we found nailed to the front door of the ranch house."
"The world."
"Yeah, the world. You're the dancer, aren't you?" He listens and waits while she lights a cigarette.
"No more than anyone else," she says. "No more than you. No more than that poor Stringfellow girl, or Standish, or the woman who served us coffee that night in Arizona."
"Did you keep the card?"
"No, it's in the archives at Barbican, for safekeeping."
He goes to the refrigerator for a few ice cubes, cracks the seal on a fresh bottle of JMB and refills his glass. "Would you like to know a secret?" he asks.
"Sure. What's one more, after all?"
"That night, they wanted me to kill you. They wanted me to kill you and take the briefcase. I talked them out of it. I still don't really know why, but I talked them out of it."
"Yes," she says. "I know. No hard feelings. No ill will."
He asks her another couple of questions,
though they're really nothing of consequence, and then she hangs up first. He'll catch hell from Albany for making the call, but what the fuck? He only wishes it had left him feeling even the smallest bit less afraid, the smallest bit less alone. But that's not the way it is, he reminds himself. You knew that when you signed up. That's not ever the way it is. The signalman sits at the big bay window of his apartment in the Santa Monica Hills, and he sips his whiskey and smokes and watches the sky. Only a few bright stars are visible through the white-orange haze of light pollution. At least that's something. It's surely more than he deserves. This concludes Agents of Dreamland by Caitlin R. Kiernan. Narrated by Danny Campbell and Chelsea Stevens. Copyright 2017 by Caitlin R. Kiernan. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Caitlin R. Kiernan, care of Writer's House, LLC, and was produced in the year 2020 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.